Hi, this is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries. I'm going to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. It is so good to actually be sitting down and recording this week's podcast. I have been so swamped. We did two 10-day series, and then we did the Easter series. And this week, I'm actually in Virginia doing a five-day week of presentations for a Christian high school here in New Market, Virginia. So things are just so crazy right now with the scheduling and with my travel. Last week I got to meet Eva Moses Kaur. Hopefully I'll do might get a chance to do a podcast or at least do a news blurb or something about that soon. But I've just been so swamped. It is good to just, I'm in a hotel room tonight. It's good to just put everything else aside and just get this recording done, laid down for you guys this week. If you're tuning in, thank you so much for listening to this week. We're going to be looking at Luke 15, verse 28. I'm calling this week Older Brother Syndrome. It's taken from the story of the prodigal son, where it says the older brother became angry and refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. This week, I want to look at three events in Luke's version of the Jesus story that reveal to us how radical Jesus' kingdom really is. So let's jump right in. The first event is the context of the most famous story Jesus ever told, the prodigal son. It seems that everybody who knows about Jesus knows that he told this story. Remember, though, I don't want to be looking at the story so much as the context of the story. In other words, what was it that motivated Jesus to tell this story in the first place? And you can find this in the first two verses of Luke chapter 15. This is Luke 15, 1 and 2. It says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" So Jesus tells three stories, the last of which is this story of the prodigal. And pay close attention to how this story closes. We're going to look at Luke 15, 20 through 32. Hang in there with me. It says, "But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. And he ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. And the son said, 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you, and I'm no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger, sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate, for this my son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. So he called one of the servants and asked him, 'What's going on?' 'Your brother has come,' he replied, 'and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound.' The older brother became angry and refused to go in, so his father went out and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, 'Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours—'" And notice that the brother calls him son of yours, not brother of mine. "'This son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home. You kill the fattened calf for him?' 'My son,' the father said, 'you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours,'" notice what the father is saying, "'was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.'" I used to believe that the only reason why anyone would not be a part of Jesus' kingdom in the age to come was because they had sincerely rejected God's love for themselves. But the longer I think about this, and the more I think about this story, the more I feel that to no longer be true. If the context of this story shows us anything, it shows us this. If there are any left out in what Jesus called outer darkness, and you can find that in Matthew 8, 12, chapter 22, verse 13, and chapter 25, verse 30. If there's any left in what Jesus calls outer darkness, I don't think it will be because they could not believe in God's love for themselves. I think, according to this story of the prodigal son and his older brother who was left out in the outer darkness, it'll be that they, like the older brother and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who are muttering against Jesus welcoming these sinners, It's because they reject God's radical, inclusive love for someone else that they feel should be excluded. It makes perfect sense if you stop to consider it. If one of my children couldn't believe that I loved them, I wouldn't reject them. Rather, I'd spend eternity trying to show them and convince them. On the other hand, if they won't embrace my love for someone else, I can't change to be something other than I am. It's a rejection of love for others, even those who are different than us, that causes us to be so out of harmony with the love of which God is. The next story I want us to look at, we looked at a few weeks ago, actually, but we're not going to go into all the great detail that we did back then. If you want to get more information on the background of this story, you can look up the e-site dated for 2/19 of 2013. That's February 19 of 2013. But it's Luke 4:25-29. It says, "I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut for 3.5 years, and there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy at the time of Elisha the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian. And all the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this. They got up, drove him out of the town, and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him off the cliff." And again, if you want the connection for of Sidon and Syria to the Greek tortures under Antiochus Epiphanes toward the Jewish people, go back and look at that e-site on February 19th. In this story, Jesus has just read from Isaiah saying, "This day Isaiah's prophecy is fulfilled in their hearing." And it would do us some good to go back and read Isaiah. This is Isaiah 61:1-2. It says, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of the vengeance of our God." And when Jesus reads from the scroll, though, he reads this passage, but he leaves off that last phrase, "and the day of the vengeance of our God." He says, this is Luke 4:18-19, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he's anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, the recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." It was almost as if Jesus is announcing that he would be traveling abroad, proclaiming God's favor. He'd be, as G.K. Chesterton says, walking the earth as the pardon of God. And Jesus is saying, "I'm going to be proclaiming God's favor, and I'm going to be leaving off all that vengeful God stuff." And this is exactly what we see Jesus doing throughout his entire ministry. But remember, at this stage, everyone listening in the synagogue that morning, everyone was rejoicing. Look what it says in Luke 4:22. "All spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips." But they still weren't getting what Jesus was saying. They knew the passage in Isaiah. Many of them probably had it memorized. They knew that it promised God's favor on them and God's vengeance finally on all of Israel's enemies. But Jesus is correcting them and virtually saying, no, you've misunderstood what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this: I'll be walking the earth, not as the vengeance of God on all of Israel's enemies, but as the favor of God for everyone, including Israel's most hated enemies. And how did they respond? It says they became furious and wanted to throw Jesus off the nearest cliff. Now, I would submit to you this week that if you have never had a moment where Jesus so challenged your fundamental beliefs that you were tempted to throw him off a cliff, you probably haven't yet met the right Jesus. Again, these folks were rejecting the kingdom, not because they were rejecting God's love for them. They were rejecting, as if God's love for them was too good to believe, too good to be true. No, what they were rejecting was God's love for their enemies, their most hated enemies. Jesus was proclaiming a kingdom that was too radically inclusive for them to embrace. One last example I think would be enough. This is in Luke 19:5-7. "When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, 'Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today.' So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. And all the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. Here we have the famous story that we tell our kids of Zacchaeus, the chief tax collector. It's in Luke 19, 1 through 2. And typically, if you're short, like Zacchaeus was, you simply would go to the curb to see the parade, and all the taller people would stand behind you, unless by chance there were those standing there who didn't want you to be there, and they were shutting you out from getting to the front to see. So Zacchaeus, you've got to imagine him being resourceful. He knows the procession of the route, and he runs ahead, and he climbs up this tree. And when Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, remember, to die, and one last time, he looks up into this tree, sees Zacchaeus, and he stops one last time before he dies, before he goes to his death. He stops to demonstrate what the radical inclusive favor that has characterized his kingdom is all about. And you have to imagine the people there objecting, muttering, trying to stop Jesus, saying, but Jesus, this guy's a sinner. And Zacchaeus is standing right there hearing all of this, and with bated breath, he's waiting to hear what Jesus is going to say to them. Will Jesus change his mind once he finds out from the people who and what I am? And then you have to imagine Zacchaeus feeling Jesus' hand squeeze his shoulder while he hears Jesus say to them, the only thing I care about is whether or not Zacchaeus' wife can make good lamb chops. And how did Zacchaeus respond to such radical, unconditional acceptance and love? During dinner, while Jesus and he were possibly sharing some hummus together, Zacchaeus becomes overwhelmed with the radical inclusivity of Jesus. Zacchaeus in Luke 19:8 says, it says, Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Moses only commanded 20% restitution. Zacchaeus here is pledging 300% restitution. And remember, just a few days earlier, in Luke 16, Jesus had experienced the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. They were responding to his call to give their possessions to the poor. They were responding to that call by sneering at him, it says. You have to imagine Jesus looking at Zacchaeus saying, I'm going to give everything, half of everything I have to the poor, and anything else I've got left over, I'm going to pay back four times to anyone I've stolen from. You have to imagine Jesus with tears of joy in his eyes, seeing the irony of how this chief tax collector is responding to the kingdom while the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were rejecting him. And Jesus says in Luke 19, verse 9, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. Again, remember the point. How did the people respond initially to Jesus going to Zacchaeus' house? Those who are left outside are not the heathens. They're not the tax collectors, the prostitutes, or the sinners. The ones that are left outside of Christ's kingdom are the ones who cannot handle the heathens, the tax collectors, and the prostitutes, and the sinners being included in God's kingdom. What is Jesus whispering to us this week? I think it's this. If any are lost at last, it will not be because they could not believe in God's love for themselves, but rather they could not embrace God's love for someone else, for someone whom they thought, for whatever reason, should not be included. In the age to come, I'm sure there will be existential bliss to those who have fallen in love with Jesus and what his kingdom is all about. But consider what it's going to be like for a close friend of mine who considers himself a gun-toting, Bible-banging, flag-waving, troop-supporting, standing-with-Israel, anti-abortion, constitutional Christian conservative. If the age to come looks like Jesus, and Jesus looks like the one we find in the Jesus story itself, then let's just say that my friend might find himself making some pretty difficult adjustments when he discovers whose presence Jesus is celebrating. And some of you who are more liberal politically, not letting you off the hook either. It's just that those other guys are the ones who are claiming to represent Jesus to those who are being marginalized. What's the heart group application this week? Number one, I want you to go back and read prayerfully Luke 14, 1 through 5, 15, and verses 15 and 23 as well. I want you to read this passage in the context of this week's eSight and the radical inclusivity of Jesus. And write down any thoughts that Jesus chooses to share with you in your reading of this passage. Jesus, remember, didn't just eat with sinners. It included the Pharisees too. The only reason the Pharisees were eventually left out was that they could not handle who else was included at the dinner table with them. Number two, prayerfully consider this thought. Jesus practiced a boundary-pushing, kosher-challenging, line-crossing, Pharisee-infuriating, radical hospitality. And the question we have to ask ourselves this week is, are we doing the same? Are we following Jesus? Number three, brainstorm with your heart group this week how you, as a group, can apply Jesus's radical inclusivity within your group. And then discuss with one another ways in which you can practice Jesus's inclusivity in your personal interactions with others outside your group throughout the week as well. To everyone else who's listening, remember, keep living in love, loving radically inclusively like Christ, until the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. Now go enlarge the kingdom. I love you guys. I'll see you next week.